Thank you so much for having me. You guys are definitely my guinea pigs before I go on Friday. So if you do come up with any amazing burning questions, you've got 24 hours to get them to me, okay? So thank you so much. My topic is obesity and contraception, and I have no relationships to disclose financially. So my research question was predominantly, does obesity impact contraception use of reproductive health services and choice in contraceptive type? And if that is indeed the case, does healthcare provider bias impact this relationship as well? So we'll explore these studies as I go forward. So as, you know, no surprise for all of you, our obesity rates are climbing in the United States. 60% of our population is overweight or obese. And discrimination against obese individuals really does impact their health status and their use of reproductive health services. And in our field, this is particularly concerning given that close relationship you want a woman to have with her provider, and that many of our most effective forms of contraception are prescriptions. So, you know, if they're compelled to, you know, avoid care or be hesitant to advocate for themselves, this is a big concern for them. Additionally, improving quality and access to reproductive health care in this population is critical, given the comorbidities that they're walking into these visits with, and then they're going to be walking into an unintended pregnancy with. So this is my framework, just to give you a brief overview. You can tell I'm practicing for my defense, right? The relationship I'm primarily looking at is obesity and use of reproductive health care services and contraception use. But you'll see me refer to a base model and an additional covariate model, and that I did include the number of partners and perceived difficulty getting pregnant and feelings about an unintended pregnancy in there, just so you have a background there. So I use the NSFG for my quantitative analysis. And just going back real quick, healthcare provider bias I conducted with qualitative interviews, so it's a mixed method study. So my quantitative analysis, I use the NSFG. So I included women that were 20 to 44, a BMI over 18.5. They weren't currently pregnant, but they were capable of having a baby. They were sexually active, and they did not want to become pregnant. So a sample that without access to contraception would likely have an unintended pregnancy. And then my qualitative data was with 18 family medicine residents in a large California-based residency program serving urban and rural patients. And I did keep that confidential so that they felt like they could really disclose and discuss some aspects of their care. And the interviews were short, but I was excited to even nail them down for 20 minutes, if you guys have ever worked with residents. So just to explore my first one, the relationship between obesity and contraception. Again, no surprise to you, but the likelihood of being obese increases as you age. In the national sample, African-American women, Hispanic women were more likely to be obese. It, you know, inversely related to educational attainment, and married women and women with kids were more likely to be obese. So just to, you know, classic trends of what we're seeing in society. So my first question was, you know, indeed, are they less likely to use contraception? And obese women who, you know, again, are at high risk for health complications from an unintended pregnancy due to obesity are very much less likely to use contraception. So ranging between 49% and 45% less likely to use contraception than women with a BMI below 24. So, you know, it's really substantial. And so this led me to think, you know, you're thinking about these you know, circumstances, you know, I just outlined a population that is impoverished, you know, it must be that they're not accessing care. That must be it. However, when I looked at having had family planning counseling in the last 12 months, having had a pelvic exam in the last 12 months, or having a visit related to birth control in the last 12 months, there's no difference by BMI for these services. So they are accessing care in the same patterns as our non-obese population. So then I was like, well, shoot. Moving forward, why is our population who's accessing care not using contraception? So I took these populations and looked among those that had access these services to see if obese women having used these services are less likely to use contraception. And indeed, that's the case. So women who had had family planning counseling in the last 12 months, if they're in that highest obese class, they are 55% less likely to use contraception. And this is a large sample, right? I mean, you know, that group alone has about 1,000 women in my sample. It makes up almost 20% of our population. So, you know, over 50% are less likely. If they've had a pelvic exam in the last 12 months, for obese class 2, they are 50% less likely, and 28% less likely if they have a BMI between 30 and 35. So they are going into doctor's offices, they are accessing care, and they are not leaving with a method of contraception. So then you're like, well, now what's going on? Real quick, I also wanted to look, you know, what types, among those that are leaving with contraception, what are they using? What's the disparity and differences there? And so I looked at contraceptive type. They're much less likely to use, this is just a descriptive analysis, so higher proportion not using a method at all, higher proportion using condoms, much lower proportion using a pill, or slightly higher rates actually of IUDs, which was exciting and, you know, gave, you know, an opportunity for public health. And then when I use this in regression, indeed, you're going to see the reference group was condoms, so you're going to see lower rates of pill use, so they were more likely to use condoms, much less likely to use a patch, much less likely to use the ring. So, you know, again, we're seeing, even among those that are then using contraception, you're seeing disparities in effectiveness of contraception. So, you know, every level of this is getting a little bit more and more concerning for reproductive health for this population. So then, I was also interested, are they more likely to discontinue a method among those that are using it? And that did not differ by BMI, but I will say that half of the women in the U.S. are reporting method discontinuation in the last 12 months. So even though that doesn't differ by BMI, good Lord, this is also something we need to take a look at. And I know many of us are in this field. So finally, I used qualitative interviews to try to get at some of the more nuanced aspects of this, especially about healthcare access. And this is, data reduction into a diagram to really try to understand, where the providers were coming from. And I was really impressed by how candid and frank they were about their experiences. So they identified components that were based on the provider and components that were based on obese patients themselves. And so for providers, they identified systemic issues. So inadequate equipment. They have speculums that they cannot do vaginal exams with. They have scales that don't go above 350 pounds. So, you know, serious equipment failure issues. They also have misperceptions about side effects in obesity. And this comes into play also with my obese patients. With the doctors reflecting on obese patients is that they really felt that many of these methods were not effective in this population. And, I mean, we all have the luxury of reading this literature, and you know that that's no longer the case. We're not seeing huge disparities in effectiveness by BMI. And they, as I'm sure you could expect, the providers are overwhelmed by the comorbidities that this population is walking into that visit with, and they have serious time restraints. So they also admitted to personal bias and talked about, you know, well, I just think that maybe they're asexual, but that's just not as sexual of a population. Well, in my quantitative analysis, they have the same rates of sexual activity as non-obese women. So that's, you know, a misperception. They also get caught up in this cycle of seeing low compliance, feeling frustrated by that low compliance, and then presuming their patients to be apathetic about all aspects of their health. And so just really get beaten down and don't advocate for those preventative health measures in these visits. For the obese patients, the providers perceived their patients to be embarrassed to ask or advocate for themselves, to have negative perceptions. And this was, you know, across the board, they kept saying, which I was fascinated by, I think they're not using contraception because they're worried about weight gain. I think that's probably why they're avoiding it. And you sit down with these providers and like, gosh, you know that at most it's 3 to 5 pounds, depending on the method. And we have so many good methods that have no weight gain associated. And I mean, gosh, the IUD is, you know, this like golden method that we could have in this population. So that was a little bit, you know, that really blew my mind when that came up so often. And to give the providers credit, I followed up all of this conversation with, well, what next? Where do you see us going for you? How can we support you? And they came through and said, you know, we just really actually need to ask everybody. In every visit, and they described it as a universal ask or a fifth vital sign, you know, and whether it's the provider doing it or having a medical assistant doing it, you know, just get that question in there so it's in the chart so that if they do have time, it's at least planting a seed of, you know, what contraception method are you using? They also talked about, you know, needing to employ compassion and patience with this population. The comorbidities that these individuals are suffering from are, you know, affect their daily life, and the providers admitted to, we don't know how hard it is to manage diabetes in this population. We don't know how hard it is to walk into these visits and not have a drape that fits you or a scale that fits you. So, you know, having a little bit more patience with this population would be helpful. And then just in general, prioritizing women's health among all of the other issues they're looking at. Because an unintended pregnancy in this population is extremely dangerous. So, and then they also identified some system improvements I hinted at. You know, we need actual physically better equipment. We need new speculums for this population. We need to do a better job of educating and supporting our doctors so that, you know, they really don't have a ton of time to delve into the literature as it's changing as we move forward. So, you know, more opportunities to do that. And then they all said, just make our visits longer. And I was like, yeah, well, we'll get to that one. But that would be ideal, absolutely. So in summary, you know, just some take home that, depending on the model, but in general, obese women are 43% less likely to use contraception than women with a BMI below 25. And this recent access to reproductive health care did not improve the rates of contraception in this population. Women who had a pelvic exam and or family planning counseling were still 44% less likely to use contraception than their counterparts. It's not a significant predictor of using a method prescribed or administered by a physician. So I took a few slides out, but you know, they did have high rates of IUD use. So it might not be the obese women feeling a pushback from, you know, being hesitant or self-conscious. It might be that providers just need to promote this method more frequently. And then the interviews were very helpful because the physicians cited patient reluctance to side effects and provider bias and time and resource restraints in a context I maybe wouldn't have considered otherwise. And they did give us some suggestions moving forward, this idea of a universal ask or a fifth vital sign to incorporate in visits. So a bright light at the end of the tunnel. And I think if anyone is interested in improving medical equipment, you would have, you know, a golden opportunity there if that's your field. So, strengths and limitations. You know, it was a cross-sectional survey, so I would like to move forward with a longitudinal survey with the NSFG. And, you know, my qualitative sample, there were short interviews, but, I mean, they moved through them quickly. So maybe a little bit more time, or maybe just different fields of medicine. So get the OB-GYNs in there. We were even talking about, you know, incorporating ED physicians, because certainly in the Central Valley, that is a primary care facility for most of our population. So being able to reach out to different providers. And otherwise, it was a decent sample size, and it was nice. This is my first chance at doing mixed methods research, and it was fun to do. So thank you so much. Thanks to my committee. And if you do have any questions, please feel free to email me.
Thank you.